Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And actually, before I begin, a big round of applause for the Radhasham Sundar Bhajan Band. Aren't they nice? It's just wonderful. So, yes, the implications of reincarnation. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks very clearly about reincarnation. As the embodied soul passes within this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. But the sober person, spiritually advanced person, is not bewildered by that change of body at the time of death. Or in other words, not bewildered by the change of body at the time of death any more than all of us, every last one of us, we were not bewildered by the changes of body that we've already been through, as Krishna says in that verse, from childhood to youth to old age. We've already been through at least a number of those changes, like from babyhood through childhood, through youth, through young adulthood, and then, you know, sort of like maturity into the middle age. Yes, it depends what your age is now, but certainly all of us have been through some, at least, of these changes. But I think, I'm pretty much sure, none of us became bewildered by the changes we have already been through. Like, basically, we've all been through babyhood and then into sort of school age, that change. Most of us have been from school age into young adulthood, like early 20s and so on. Many of us have been through our 30s, some have been through 40s, some 50s, some 60s. I wonder, who is the oldest person here? Radha Radha, goodness.
83!
It's a world record. Congratulations. Thank you. Oh, you're only 80, youngster. Now you haven't seen anything. And you? 80. Another youngster. All right. So, Radha Vallabha, and all of you, we wish you many more years. Because we like your association, and we just want to carry on relishing your association. You know, they're 83. 80. I am a sprightly 62. Oh. Just a kid. Just out of school. Okay, anyway. So, but our point was, we quoted that verse, famous verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 13, and Krishna makes that point, that we've all been through some of those changes, from childhood to youth to adulthood, middle age, it depends on your age, but we've all been through some of them. We've all been through some of them. But the verse says that a sober person will not be bewildered by the change of body at the time of death. And the idea, as we said, is not bewildered any more than we were bewildered when we went through those changes of body that we've all been through. Yes. So, from childhood to sort of youth, something like that, from youth to adulthood, most of us have been through those changes at least. And none of us became disturbed. Like, well, where is my childhood body? Where did it go? Oh no! None of us felt like that. This is what we mean by bewilderment. Oh, change of body, my Lord. What happened to the old body? So none of us, we've all been through those changes or some of them, and none of us became bewildered in that way. But we just took it in our stride, and indeed, in many cases, in fact, I remember personally, my last year, before I went into high school in New Zealand, I was 12. And I was thinking, I want to become 15 as soon as possible. I really want, and I wanted the change of body to happen. Not that I was lamenting for the change of body, I wanted it to accelerate even. Because in New Zealand, where I'm from, materially, when you're 15, you can get your driving license. And you can drive people mad, endanger your life and others. I got my license when I was 15. Really? I learned to drive when I was 13 anyway, okay. So, but that's not the point. Change of body. So Krishna's point is that just as we have not been bewildered already, because we've already done it, changed bodies from childhood to youth to adulthood perhaps. So just as we were not bewildered by those changes, a person, Krishna says, dira means sober. Not just sober in the sense of sort of cool, calm and collected in that sense, although to some degree, but really sober. The implication is that due to the development of spiritual consciousness, spiritual awareness of oneself and other people and life, due to attaining, or at least to some degree attaining, that spirituality of consciousness with the insight that comes with it and the, well, the insight, of course, you know, insight in the sense, for example, that these bodies are just vehicles and we are like the drivers. We are not these bodies. And the body, sooner or later, whenever it may be, the body will die, but I will not die. With insights like that, then the person, spiritually aware person, they become much more able, much more equipped to deal with the, you know, the challenges, the dramas, and all the different things that life throws at you. Because let's face it, every single one of us sitting here has had a few things thrown at us by life. Am I right or am I right? Yes, I'm right. We know this is how it works. Even if you're some big, important, rich, influential, powerful person, but you've been through a few things. But with the development of spiritual consciousness, you can take these things in your stride more, because you have a deeper perception, a deeper understanding, and with it, from it, a deeper perception of what is going on around you. Like, as an example, children. We all know children. Many of you have children or have had. And we've all had experience, plenty of experience with children. And let me relate to you one little incident that I had with two little boys. It was a couple of years ago in Siberia, in Russia. Two little boys, preschool, maybe 2 to 3 years. Well, they're small boys. One of the little boys had two little plastic horses. You know, sort of that size, small, one in each hand. And he was happy. It was happy days with the horses. And there he was with his horses. The other little boy came along and saw him with his two horses, one in each hand. The other little boy didn't even really ask, but sort of gestured, "Give me one." And the first boy with the horses, seeing perhaps he was a little more broad-minded, maybe just a little, so he gave him one of the horses. Now they've each got a horse. Now the second boy decided he wanted the other horse too. So he gestured, you know, give me the horse. All right. The other little boy didn't want to give the other horse, so the second boy just stole it, just grabbed it, whack! He was bigger. And now he had two horses, and the first boy had no horses. And the first boy, he was not on that level of sort of spiritual perception, spiritual awareness, detachment from, you know, plastic horses and other things. The poor little first boy, my gosh, he became traumatized. He was screaming and stamping his feet and waving his arms. It was, I think you've all seen it happen, haven't you? A few times in your lives. Yeah. But now as adults, we can see that faster courses, you know, it's okay, don't worry about it. Either we'll take them back, or we'll just buy you another couple of horses. They probably cost £5 each. And now you can have, you can all have horses. But that first little boy, due to his consciousness not being developed and seeing, you know, how to negotiate to get the horses back, or how to, you know, somehow or other just grab the horses or tell his mother to get the horses, he went into this terrible panic condition. So, that's children. And we as adults, we see it and we know it's just children. And it's not to be taken so seriously. You know, isn't it? You see children crying, crying, we want something, they get it, suddenly they're smiling. Within 2 seconds they're smiling. They weren't really crying, in other words, they weren't really traumatized. Yes. So now for adults, the same principle applies. That we become attached, like those little boys were attached to the little horses. We become attached to our different things, our bank balance. Our bank balance. We wait for the end of the month, at least some do. And we get our bank statement. And what do? Isn't it some people hold it to their hearts, their bank statement, kiss it?
If you want to know how to live before you die,
okay. So, or maybe you get it electronically, yeah, internet banking, so you kiss your computer screen. Anyway, don't mind me. But people feel like this. People feel like this. Our bank balance, our house, our Lani house, our Lani motor car, BMW, big money wasted. Yes. So, we become attached to these things. And sometimes when people lose these things, just as the child I mentioned became traumatized. So adults become traumatized also, particularly if they really lose a lot, you know, if they actually lose all their money, go bankrupt, or lose their Lani house, and now they have to move into a, you know, into the flats in Unit 3, Chatsworth, something like that. Of course, there are some people living in the flats in Unit 3 Chatsworth, and they're okay. Yeah, there's a few gangsters there, and a few people, just people, ordinary people, and for them it's okay. Someone else loses his Lani house in Westville, or Bryanston in Johannesburg, and they have to shift back into a flat in Unit 3, or even worse, in Unit 2. Ooh, Chatsworth. And they, you know, it's too much. It's just too much. It's just too much. Some people, they have, you know, like a billion or two or three, but somehow they lose it. They end up with only 1 million, and they become devastated. And other people, if they get 1 million, they'll think it's just fantastic. So, it's all a matter of consciousness. But the thing is, people become very attached to severe, temporary, material situation. And when they lose it, particularly at the time of death, when they just lose everything, including the body itself, the time of death is the most shocking experience for many, many people. Because they're losing everything. But here, Krishna is saying in that verse, it's Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 13. Krishna's saying that a sober person who is sober on the basis of spiritual knowledge, understanding, and in that way is able to perceive things, the value of things on a deeper level, such a person, when the time of death comes, they are no more bewildered than we, that's all of every single one of us, than any of us were bewildered already when our bodies changed from childhood to youth, etc. And none of us were bewildered by that. We took it in our stride, and perhaps we didn't even really think about it at all. So, a person who's spiritually advanced, a person who's Krishna conscious, when the time of death comes, it is not a time for panic, for distress, anxiety. It is not a time to call the doctor and say, "Listen, doc, give me another 4 years, just 4 years, so I can fulfill all my plans." Yeah. No. Prabhupada was asked once, it's a bit of a long story, but basically, he was being interviewed during the time of the war between Pakistan and India, back in the, I think, early 70s or something along those lines. And the Pakistani planes flew over Mumbai, and Prabhupada was being interviewed by a very nationalistic reporter. And the reporter, well, the whole city was blacked out when the planes flew overhead. And the reporter said to Prabhupada, "What do you think of this? Well, listen, look at what these Pakistanis are doing. They're terrible." And he said to Prabhupada, if these Pakistani planes dropped a bomb on your head now, what would you think?" And Prabhupada said that a devotee, if the devotee sees, "Here comes a bomb, it's going to land on my head and blow me up," the devotee thinks, "Here comes Krishna in the form of a bomb, coming to take me to him. Jai Sri Krishna." And the devotee doesn't think, "Oh, what to do, how to escape," and all that sort of stuff. Doesn't worry, because sooner or later, our time is going to come. You know, all these people on MH370, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Malaysian Airlines. I used to be a gold frequent flyer with them. They stopped flying to South Africa. I'm glad of that. Otherwise, I might have been on the plane. So, you know what happened? You see what happened? It's very, very interesting, but it's very true. What happened was, there were, how many people were on that plane? Was like 240 or, including the crew, plus or minus 230, 240, whatever. So, Those people, every single one, according to their karma, the reactions to their activities from the past, earlier in this life, previous lifetimes, their activities in the past, every single one of them was due to die suddenly and violently in the same way at exactly the same time. And Krishna, you know, Krishna, I tell you what, the more you get to understand Krishna, or yeah, to understand him and know about him, the more you get to see Krishna is one smart fellow. I tell you what, smart fellow. Oh. You know, you think Mr. Putin is smart. Smarter than Obama, I can tell you that. Because he is ex-KGB. And you must know what that means. That means, I'll tell you later. Well, I'll tell you now then. It means, you know, KGB was by invitation only, strictly by invitation only. You know, you couldn't knock on the door and say, hey, I think I'd like to become a spy. I saw a 007 movie. It seems cool. It was by invitation only. And only the most brilliant were invited. And they were rarely tested and screened before they were accepted. So they had to just be brilliant, brilliant in the extreme. Three things. Brilliant, extremely nationalistic, and extremely, should we say ruthless, or should we just say extremely pragmatic about achieving goals by any way, any means, achieve the goal. And then, you know, now you understand Mr. Putin a bit. Anyway, where were we? Where were we? So, Krishna? Is Krishna, okay, Krishna is smarter than Putin. Yeah. Oh, the plane, we were on the plane. Well, fortunately we were not on the plane. But Krishna is so smart. He brought them all together. There were some Chinese. There were some Malaysians. I believe there were some Americans. And there were some others. There were different nationalities. Some old people, some young people. Some business people, some students, some working people. All different types of people. A whole range. But they were all to die at the same moment, that split second, in the same violent way. Yeah. So somehow they all came together from all the different places for different reasons. Some were going home, you know, to visit their family. Others were on business trips, and others were, you know, all different orientations. But they all thought, I must take this flight. This particular flight. I must take it. And they did. And it happened. Yeah. So, yes. So they all died. You know, it must have been very violent, but very quick, probably. Yeah, and right at the same moment. So, you know, you can imagine, can you imagine? They must have been screaming and yelling and panicking, and it must have been bizarre. One devotee was telling me he was on a flight many years ago, and suddenly the plane dropped like, you know, a few hundred feet, just free fell, and the cups and things on the tray tables, they all levitated because it just dropped so fast. And he said the panic was just like, it was like a madhouse. Just everyone, practically everyone, went totally bananas on the spot. Hare Krishna. But the devotee, our devotee, did not go bananas. He said at first he went a little bananas, but then he remembered, wait a minute, I must chant. So he grabbed his beads and started chanting. And he chanted for like a few seconds, and suddenly, bang, it stopped dropping, and then it just sort of, you know, flattened out, and away they went. Yeah. Hare Krishna. So this is the point. This is one of the points. Quick time check. This is one of the points that if a person becomes spiritually advanced, then they will be able to deal with death, be it their own or others, or even their own, in a completely cool way. And work with the situation systematically. Yeah, actually work with the situation. Okay, death is right here and it's just happening. So what should I do? What should I do? I should fix my mind on Krishna and just fix my mind on Krishna and just chant and be focused like that. This is one of the great gifts of Krishna consciousness. Now, our program is called The Implications of Reincarnation. What we have mentioned so far, you might think, it's not so much to do with reincarnation, so much. But it is, because according to Krishna, we are reincarnating at every moment. As you sit there right now, as we sit here right now, we are reincarnating because Prabhupada made the point that every 7 years, every cell in our body is replaced. Not just suddenly, 7 years comes and then replacement happens, but over a period of 7 years, gradually every cell in your body is replaced with another cell. And what that means is that we are literally sitting now in a different body, a completely different body than we were in 7 years ago, or say 8 years ago. A completely different body. In Australia, you know, you're all South Africans, I'm from New Zealand. You may not know so much about Australia. You didn't miss a lot, I tell you, frankly. Because as far as New Zealanders are concerned, Australians, they're all just convicts. Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, you know, from New Zealanders' perspective. But in Australia, about more than 100 years ago, there was a big criminal. Big criminal. His name was Ned Kelly. Did you ever hear of med killing? One or two? Okay, well, he was a big criminal. In the earlier days, you know, sort of when they were just developing Australia. So anyway, they killed him. They hung him eventually. Ned Kelly had a special gun. Ned Kelly's gun, it was sort of like some ornamental type of gun, which he used to shoot people. And when someone shoots you, it doesn't really matter if the gun is ornamental or not. It feels the same. So they took his gun. This is back in maybe 1870 or something like that. Many years ago, they took his gun and put it into a museum on display. Ned Kelly's gun. And you know what happened? After a while, the barrel rusted. They had to replace the barrel with, you know, another one that looked the same. Some years later, the handle rusted. Well, we're talking about 140 years. These things happen. The handle rusted. They had to replace it with another handle, which looked the same, but it was another handle. Then, the middle part, where they put the bullets, etc., the middle part rusted. They had to replace it. And it looked the same, but it wasn't. It was. So it's still on display, Ned Kelly's gun. But you know what? It is not Ned Kelly's gun. It is not his gun any longer. It's another gun that looks the same. You get the idea. So these bodies, they look the same. You know, particularly when you get to my age, you know, you go to apply for a visa, you must provide a photo which is like not more than 3 months old or 6 months at the most. When you get to this age, you can give them a photo from 10 years ago. They don't notice the difference at all. I can tell you because I've done it many times. I have a whole stack, a collection of photos from 15 years ago, and they never notice. One of the benefits, few benefits of getting older. Anyway, okay. So, our bodies, like, what is your age, sir? 34. He's 34. Now, every 7 years, new body means he is at the end of what? His fourth body, we could say, sort of going into his fifth body. Yeah. So, we have already been through reincarnation. And when the body changes at the time of death, it's just a more sort of dramatic change, you know, quicker change. And so, it, you know, it's not the gradual change which you hardly notice. And therefore people become affected. Whereas during this life, nobody becomes affected, really. So, implications of reincarnation. I want to now, briefly, because I only have 2 minutes left, I want to talk about the implications of there possibly not being reincarnation. The implications. At least from, you could say, a theistic point of view. If there is God, and if there is no reincarnation, but if there is God, then, ladies and gentlemen, how did we get our specific bodies? How? And beyond that, How did we get born in our specific situations? You know, a few months ago, Ambarish Prabhu, Alfred Ford was here. He was born, you know, what to speak of a silver spoon in his mouth, a solid gold spoon encrusted with diamonds or something like that. And with respect, I don't doubt, I assume that at least one or two people sitting here in the tent right now were born in, you could say, you know, really underprivileged circumstances. That would not be surprising at all. Yeah. And actually, we're all born in different situations. You know, I'm born in New Zealand, you're all born here. Why? In New Zealand, there was no apartheid. Our, you know, we were not a wealthy family, but I would say we lived comfortably. Our next door neighbors were Maoris. They're not a Maoris. It was like Polynesian, native South Pacific people. And it was just normal. It was just normal. And when I heard about apartheid, you know, I heard about apartheid when I was young, and it was like, what? What is this? Actually, I heard about segregation in America, the racial segregation in America, because it became a big issue, you know, maybe late 50s or very early 60s, when I was sort of starting to think a little more. And the first impression was, what? What is this? You know, like, wow, this is madness. Which it was. But, yeah. So, different people are born in situations. And if there is God, how do you explain it? Without reincarnation. If you include reincarnation, then, you know, you've got all the previous activities from previous lifetimes, and how much good and how much bad, and, you know, all these considerations. And as a result, people are born in this situation, that situation, etc., etc. Like, I used to know a person. He was, don't mind me saying this, he was a big drug dealer. And I don't mean aspirin or antibiotics. He was not a pharmacist. Well, he sort of was a pharmacist, actually. He was a big. And he used to deal in hallucinogenics, means particularly LSD, also psilocybin, and, oh, I forget the names. Thank you, Krishna. So, and people would buy his drugs, and he was making a good living. People would buy his drugs, and some of them would lose it, and just become like crazy people. They get into psychological conditions and they couldn't get out. So, a person who does like that, what will his next birth be? Think about it. I would say, this is just my sort of extrapolation, I would say it's very likely they would be born like mentally handicapped, with some severe psychological condition, something like that, on the basis of what they've done. But otherwise, you know, people are born with severe psychological conditions. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? Everyone, to some degree, has some psychological conditions. Did you know that? It's a fact. But some people have severe psychological conditions from birth. And for the rest of their life, I mean, I know a few who are actually devotees, but they are not sane. They're really, really not sane. So, if there's God, but there is no reincarnation, how do you explain that? Well, you know, I would say at best, it becomes extremely difficult. At best, it becomes extremely difficult, and it may really not be possible to give like a very convincing type of explanation. But if we include reincarnation, it becomes a lot easier to understand. Otherwise, you know, either God doesn't care. Well, there's a book called Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? It was produced maybe 40 years ago. Fairly well-known book, you can look it up on the internet. Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? The person who wrote it, who was a Jewish rabbi, he said that, well, God is there. You know, God is there, that's one of the basic assumptions in the book. So God is there. So either one, God, in the beginning he was competent and bad things did not happen to good people. Only good things happen to good people. And bad things happen to bad people. Which, you know, in a certain sense is what you might expect or hope for. But this rabbi, he said, after some time, God lost control. God became insufficiently competent to handle, you know, all the things and all the people and everything that was going on. And as a result, bad things started happening to good people, and good things started happening to bad people, and all sorts of things started happening, which in terms of this one lifetime, you can't really explain very easily. So he said, that's what happened. And he says, the alternative is, and this is interesting, that it is not that God became incompetent. He's still sufficiently competent, but he just stopped caring. He just stopped caring. And so, you know, let a bad thing happen to a good person. Tough luck. And so on like that. But in Krishna consciousness, we don't accept that. We don't accept that. And neither does it seem reasonable at all. At all. It doesn't sound reasonable. So, the implications of there not being reincarnation are actually quite bad. But the implications of reincarnation, if we look at life around us, what's happening, what's going on, it gives a philosophical foundation for understanding, evaluating how people and different living entities end up in different situations, and gives you the ability to see what direction a person is going in their life. What sort of future are they creating? I think I have to finish. Who's on next? Is he here?
Okay. Okay.
Yes. Indiegogo and the marriage will come soon. Yeah. So if reincarnation is there, it makes things a lot easier to understand. And it makes it a lot easier to see some logic behind what's going on in this world. Otherwise, it appears to be extremely chaotic. Let me close. Well, I have a few questions, actually. But I think let me just close with two points. One point is sometimes you get very interesting karmic situations or even like quirks. Sometimes you see some big rich person is driving in his big, you know, may even be a Rolls Royce actually, or at least some sort of big recent Mercedes Benz. So there he is driving in his S-Type, shall we say, S-Class Mercedes Benz 2014 model. S-500! Whoa! You know, clap, clap. Anyway, that's okay. And in the front passenger seat, who is there? The dog! I've seen them in Rolls Royces. The dog is sitting in the front passenger seat, being chauffeured. And just looking around at life, I say, what's going on with these plebs? These things happen. How did it happen? Well, it's karma. It's reincarnation. You know, the dog, with all respect to dogs, you know, all due respect, I don't know how much they do, but anyway, they do not do so many things, like good things. They, not usually, which would give them good karma to now live in the Lani house, isn't it? But from their previous life, Prabhupada was visiting some friend of the devotees in Manhattan, New York, in the earlier days of ISKCON, in a, you know, very nice apartment. And the gentleman, the friend of the devotees, sat Prabhupada down, went to get him some water. And the devotee assisting Prabhupada said, you know, Prabhupada, this apartment cost $1.5 million. Now it's probably like 15 or 20, but $1.5 million. Oh, he's a rich man. As the devotee said that, a mosquito flew by Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada pointed to the mosquito and said, how much did he pay to live in this apartment? Because he was living in the same apartment. And I'm sure there are a few cockroaches too. Okay, that's one thing I wanted to say. And the very last thing I want to say is that the answer to all these tricky situations and the complexities of life and getting tangled up in the complexities of life on the material level, in this material world, is we have to become Krishna conscious. You know, easier said than done, but that's what we have to do. The majority of you are householders, married people, family people. Most of those of you who are not married people, family people, will become, in due course, the rate of attrition, anyway, no, the rate of those who become householders in our experience in Krishna consciousness is plus or minus 95 to 97%. So, you know, it's really the vast majority, which is fine. It's good. But our experience is that many devotees who become householders, and they're devotees, they want to practice Krishna consciousness, but they find in householder life there are many challenges. How to arrange, you know, you gotta work, you gotta give your children time, and etc., etc. How to work things out in your life so you maximize your Krishna consciousness and you don't get sidetracked into, you know, there are many things you can get sidetracked into, even just television. So how to remain focused, then how to bring up children so they actually become devotees and don't, you know, when they grow up they become teenagers, etc. They don't just end up becoming punk rockers or whatever the current, you know, idea is. But they actually become devotees and they're happy to become devotees. So we've seen, and I've personally observed over all the last so many years, 40 years, how many families struggle with these things. Now, one of our devotees who used to be here in South Africa, Jagannath Eshwari Devi Dasi, who's been married probably now 30 years or more even, she's produced a very nice book, which we have over there. Let me just show you. It's called The Four Goals of Family Life. It's about 370 pages. Okay. Yes. Excuse me. That's good. So, it is available here. We'd like. It's a very good book. Extremely helpful. We'd like you all to get a copy. They're selling it in the book stand, I think, for 90 rands or at least 75. Here, if you would like a copy today, but please don't tell them over there, because they'll shoot me. You can have a copy for 60 rands. Okay? I'll be sitting over here. Feel free to come and get a copy. And Govinda Maharaj will take over here in the meantime. Okay? Huh? Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much, Srila Prabhupada ki. Let me get the mic.